Welcome to the daily VFN radio highlights at VFNTV.com. Enjoy. If you have not yet read the book, and this is a book that will just encourage you if you're wondering what the heck is going on, what's happening. George Barna, I mean, who would ever think a statistician? I mean, can you imagine sitting down with George? So those waffles, 4 out of 5 waffles are like, I mean, it's like, okay, thanks. I appreciate that, George. But he studies the church and he begins to look at our fruit and mm-hmm. look at where we are at. And in his book, he talks about, it's called Worn Out on Church, W-O-R-N, Worn Out on Church Revolution, Finding Vibrant Faith Beyond the Walls of the Sanctuary. And there's one thing he talks about in his book about the local church. He says that we have a tendency to promote to the world that the church, and we've heard this, that the local church is the hope of the world. The local church is the hope of the world. Like most advertising slogans, he says, this notion is emotionally appealing. The trouble is that this particular sentiment is not biblical. He says, as we know, Jesus alone is the hope of the world. But when you understand where the church is at, he goes on to say that the local church, if the local church is the hope of the world, then the world has no hope at all.
Oh, wow.
Because you think about it, because we're all sinners. I mean, how could we be the hope?
That's right.
We're not hope. Now, if we listen to the Lord and we obey him and follow him, abide with him, then there's hope because Christ in us is going to reach them and we're going to preach his kingdom is near them, not hey, we are near you. We're trying not to get in the way. Paul says, I hope my flesh does not distract from the
Injured
message.
This year.
Yeah, I hope it's not bothering you. We tend to have a tendency to get in the way. Mm-hmm. Especially if we are saying we're the hope of the world. Mm-hmm. And the statistics alone begins to talk about this. He says, you know, being in a right relationship with God and his people is what matters. Scripture tells us that devoting your life to loving God with all of your heart, mind, strength, and soul is what honors him. Being a part of a local church may facilitate that or may not facilitate that. Mm. Right. It always follows our conversations, don't it?
Right. Yeah, right.
I'm just reading George Barna here. I'm reading George Barna. I'm reading George Barna, and you've got to get this because he statistically has proven this. And he's frustrated. He's frustrated because when you read the Bible and you see the church, it's like if we've been together with Christ that long, how come we don't look more like his disciples? Mm-hmm. How come we're not being transformed into his image and likeness? Mm-hmm. And sometimes we forget, he goes on to say, that the current forms of religious practices and community were developed hundreds of years ago, long after the Bible was written, in an attempt to help believers live more fulfilling Christian lives. Mm. We should keep in mind that what we call church, it's just one interpretation of how to develop and live a faith-centered life. We made it up, he writes. It may be healthy and helpful, but it's not sacrosanct. Mm-hmm. And that word means that because we call it church, it's not it's not as holy as Christ. It's not
right.
It's not sacrilegious. To ask yourself and to rethink this thing called church. It's just because it's something that we made up in the context of how we're doing it. Because I remember when God had me on this journey and I'm looking and I'm saying, I see what you're doing and I think it's so cool. I mean, I like this and I like the Rotary Club too. And that club I was in school, I just love it. It's just really cool. I like community. I was in the military. I had, you know, some guys and stuff that we hung out with and these different things. But the issue that I'm having here, this is the issue I'm having, I can't find it in the scriptures. I remember that Pat and I were in a meeting once and somebody says that that's not biblically ethical or something like that. And I'm like, help me out. I'm totally open. Where would this be at? You know, yeah, right. Fill me in. Right?
That's right.
That's it. I fill me in. I'm totally.
You got a book? I'm telling you. Well,
I'm like, I am pumped. I am on the edge of my seat. I have my Franklin planner out and I'm leaning forward, buddy, and I'm going to write down exactly what you said because I've been looking for this answer for a long, long time.
And of course, tell me.
Yeah, and then of course the particular person, you know, acknowledges it doesn't exist.
Right.
But prior to that confrontation, they were talking like this thing existed that you can't put your finger on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important for us to realize that we made this up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it could help us or it could hinder us.
Mm-hmm.
But not being willing to rethink what we're doing, something that we made up, is foolish.
Mm-hmm.
It's foolish. Somebody says, well, you know, every time I go to this particular place, I experience God. Well, if you're a believer, it's because Christ is in you. The hope of glory is Christ in you. The hope of glory is not the church. It's Christ in you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that when two or more who are believers are gathered together, then Jesus Christ is in your midst, not just in you, but now he rules over you.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're seeing the church when two or more come together. You're seeing the fulfillment of Christ ruling in the midst of the church. Now, whether you do that under a tree in Afghanistan or whether you do that in a crystal cathedral in California or whether you do it, you know, at a drive-in theater where some people are doing it during an off day or something. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just wherever you're at is where the church is at.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to rethink this because we could be putting all of our energies and efforts into something that we invented, we made up. And we got to ask ourselves this question then. Is what I'm doing and what I'm preaching and what I'm telling other people to be a part of and to actually take what's God's and invest in it,
mm-hmm.
is it helping them fulfill the Great Commission? Is it helping them be fruitful? And is it helping them to hear the voice of the Great Shepherd that they're supposed to hear?
Mm.
Is it helping them love God, love others, and lead others to the same? And if he goes on to write in this book, and you've got to read this, this is just so enlightening when you read it. But he talks about in here, my bookmark is missing, but about statistics and these statistics about the local church. It's amazing what they're saying about where we are and what we've invented. He says the biweekly attendance at worship service is, by believers on a mission, generally the only time they worship God.
Mm.
So the thing that we created, that we made up, that's the only time that they do what they're supposed to do all the time. So we got to say, what did we do that made you think that what you're called to do 24/7, you only do it biweekly when you come into this place?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whatever you're doing it in is irrelevant. We're talking about what did we promote that caused them to think that was okay.
And it's okay to evaluate that. It's okay to rethink that.
Yes, of course. Especially since you're going to have to answer alone for that. And I can't, you know, I'm like, Lord, please, I just like to move away from Jeremiah. But God deals harshly with shepherds and church leaders who don't ask these questions and allow God to answer them, basically. Mm-hmm. Well, we are doing things that are not, they're not bringing people closer to God, but it's keeping them in a confined, immature, and they're dependent on you type state.
Mm-hmm.
And where they're being taken advantage of, they're being devoured and these different things. But Jeremiah 25 talks about that in 26. But it goes on to say in his book, George Barna, that 8 out of every 10 believers, that's 80%, do not feel they have entered into the presence of God or experienced a connection with him during the worship service.
Mm.
So when they come together for the biweekly encounters, we were saying earlier, that they do not even, 80% don't even experience God.
Right.
But yet, they only do it when they're in that particular thing that we made up. And it's like, are we willing to throw away everything that we made up so that people will encounter him? Are we willing? I mean, Jesus walked past everything that men made up.
Right.
That's right.
In the streets. And when he did go into the things the men made up, they tried to kill him, and they were upset mm-hmm. with him. And so he walked the streets, mm-hmm. the dirt mm-hmm. streets. And so God had to walk outside of what men made up.
Wow.
To be God. And people followed him. The people who got all caught up in the things they made up were worried that they were going to lose the people that they had confined in the thing they made up.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so then they began to plot against God. They began to plot against Jesus because they were jealous and they thought he's going to have a greater following. And in that, I got to do away with him. I got to kill him.
Right.
Right.
That's it. You know, that's no axe, light. So understanding that, it says half of all believers say they do not even feel they have entered into the presence of God or experienced a genuine connection with him during the past year.
Half?
Half of regular church attendance. We're not talking about, you know, the people who don't even go that call themselves Christian. We're talking about the ones that go right. at least twice a month. He goes on to say that only one out of every four churched believers say that when they worship God, they expect him to be the primary beneficiary of their worship, which means this. Most people expect it. They think that worship is about them. 75% of the people that worship, that's why the worship leaders come in like tissues. You know, you pull them like tissues from a Kleenex box. It's like, okay, mm-hmm. next one.
Mm-hmm.
That's why that he or she has to be dynamic and has to put this show on. I like what Kechara says in Texas. She's talking about, you know, give a shout out to you this morning, Kechara. She said, it was like a concert. We would just show up for this concert. didn't get anything from it, but it was like this concert. It was just a big right. show.
Right.
And you have to, when people think that that worship, the music is about them, that's what happens. And the question is, sir, who has a gift of music, ma'am, who has a gift of music, that are you okay with that? What's invented? Are you right. really okay with that? Remember, this was an issue that Satan, you know, didn't deal with.
Sure.
He didn't deal with that because he was a musician. So, I mean, we can blame everything on whatever else, but you got to ask the question. If you know that's true, and if you know that that some man's told you that you're going to have to put on a good show,
mm-hmm.
because these folks think worship is about them right. instead of about God, by the way,
mm-hmm.
then that whole thing is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's wrong.
Right.
It's man-centered, not God-centered.
Yeah, and it just kind of negates the very fact in Kenya where they're beating on a round saw blade to have music while they're clapping their hands and God's showing up and people are getting healed without any hair product at all. I mean, this
no spiky
going,
or nothing.
No spike and no... You know, the perfect this and perfect that. Because you know why? Because when they're beating on the saw blade and they're clapping their hands, they know their worship is about God.
Right.
And so you got to make up your mind. You know, what have we... I'm talking about rethinking this thing. Be willing... And it's really tough because when you start walking with God, you have to give up everything man made up to be able to walk with God.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you got to do that. And so you'll be surprised, like... Oh, I really liked that part. It's pretty good. That was pretty good. Yeah, the neurosurgeon, the foot doctor, the children's ministry, the men's ministry, the wife's ministry is like, let's just compartmentalize this thing. We don't like each other anyway. Let's just spread us out and you guys raise. As a matter of fact, they even say that specifically in here in regards to discipling. It says the large majority of the church, he says, believers rely upon their church rather than their family to train their children to become spiritually mature.
Wow.
And over again, it's the statistics are just not good in regards to that. In regards to investment, he says the churched Christians give away about 3% of their income in a typical year and feel pleased at their sacrificial generosity.
Wow.
He studied them. I mean, he's talking to them. Fewer than one out of every 10 church Christians donate at least 10% of their income to churches and other nonprofit organizations. More than one third claim to do so. So he's saying that 10% out of that
mm-hmm.
tithe, but 33% say they do.
Right. Wow.
Isn't that crazy? It's like it's for a man. You have to understand all the stuff is for men, but you will answer at the throne of God. Mm-hmm. I'm excited about this because, I mean, if you're following us this conversation, first of all, if you're a pastor, you're really like you're listening intently right now, mm-hmm. because you know every time you read your word, you're thinking like this is not in there, but I know they have to do this because this keeps this thing going, and it all becomes about this thing that we made up that has to keep this machine moving.
That's right.
And God's called you to be free, and you have to acknowledge the fact that when you lead people to God, some people want to be with them, some don't. You just have to honor their decision.
All right.
You can't want it for them more than they want him. And so the church is the people who want him, mm-hmm. who are hungry for him. When asked to explain, he goes on to say, their understanding of biblical stewardship, less than one out of 20, includes resources such as time, relationship, ideas, skills, and other types of assets. So think about it, that nobody thinks about, hey, not only do I tip God financially, you know,
right.
give him his tithe, but I'm supposed to give myself, my stuff, my things.
Imagine that.
Then it doesn't cross their mind in America. Mm. It doesn't cross their mind. In regards to servanthood, he says, in a typical week, only one out of every four believers will allocate some time to serve other people. Most of the time, it's dedicated to volunteering in church programs that serve congregants. Little effort is invested to serve in needy people outside the congregation. It is so, it's like, you know, let me,
wow.
It's just like, did you ever think of going into the harvest field? Mm-hmm. Well, no, the thing that you created allows me not to.
Mm-hmm.
It allows me not to.
That's right.
But if you just open your eyes for a moment, just for a moment, and I think about the movie Midnight Express, and I can't tell you, it's been years since I've seen it, so I can't tell you what the content of it, but I remember one particular scene in it. I would encourage you to watch it on Clearplay, just in case. That he was, a true story, he was arrested for smoking his Bible. He was arrested for transporting hash. He had hash, which is a drug, and he had it wrapped in foil, and he taped it around his chest or something like that. He put a shirt on, he's going to get on the plane, and he gets caught, mm-hmm. and he gets put in a Turkish prison. And everybody kind of just, they're all locked up in this prison, and they couldn't, you just did your time. And mm-hmm. they had this exercise dungeon that looked like a grinding mill, but it had a pole in the middle of it, mm-hmm. concrete pillar in the middle of it, and it was all dirt, and then it had, you know, stone circular thing around it, and they would just all walk in one direction. They'd always mm-hmm. just walk in one direction. And he just kind of eventually quit fighting and just joined in, and they showed him, you know, just doing what everybody else did. And this is the church. This is what the church is doing. This is what you do. It's time to do our 15 minutes and move on. And so he decided, I've got to get a hold of myself. I've got to get a hold of myself. I've got to shake myself. I can't just, and he began to look at things and say, this is not right. I can get free from this.
Right.
I can get free from this. And the call, if you haven't read the call, A Prophetic Word from Rick Joyner, you got to read it, because this is exactly what it's like. And then you begin to question, look around, and go, this is stupid. This is stupid. You know, ignorance or insanity. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again and expect different results.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's insane.
Is it working?
It's insane. If we're, it's not going to ever change if we keep doing the same thing. Why not mm-hmm. let's rethink this thing and say, maybe we're supposed to be the church instead of go to it, from the very fact that we are the church, that we're going to be drawn together. And in that, like the people who are banging on the saw blade and clapping their hands in Kenya, and God's healing people and delivering people and setting them free and saving the witch doctor in the community, just like the book of Acts, maybe. And so he says this, he's walking in the exercise yard, going in the same direction that everybody else is in that little dungeon thing. And then he turns around and he starts going the other way.
Hmm.
And he's going against the grain. He's in people, the people that were there, the insane ones, thought that, what are you doing? And they started hitting him and punching him. And they were just like, this is not the way it works.
Mm-hmm.
And so he persisted and just let them hit him and knock him and bump him because he's going against a whole crew that was going the other direction. And, you know, he's called us to be nonconformists. Listen, if God, if where you are is nullifying the word of God, if it just becomes a lecture to you and you're looking for music that makes your flesh jump around the room and everybody's criticizing the pastor when he was supposed to train you up for words of service and you're criticizing him because he's not doing your job, I'm talking to you. This is insane.
Right.
But you have to be willing to go against the grain. You have to be willing to say, this is insane. We're not going to get any more different results out of this if we keep doing this. And at the same time, while we're doing this, church, and we're talking about people, while we're doing this, the world, gross darkness is lying over this world right now. And we have spiritual ghettos and spiritual camps waiting to take in more believers and just say, just hang around and walk in the same direction. Everybody, you don't have to be fruitful. 95%, he says in this book, 95%, not this book, but George Barna says, 95% of most Christians will not deliver or lead one person to the saving knowledge of Jesus Christ. Not one. And so we have to rethink this. I know this is crazy in the context of, is he really saying this? And it's like, you know, I'm going to answer to God.
That's right.
And you are too, by the way. And you can't blame it on anybody around you.
That's right.
And the truth is that if you had to name everybody on that pew that you were sitting with, you couldn't name them. You can talk about their life, and you wouldn't even know. And the fact is, you had to face the fact you didn't care. And that you got to get free. You got to bust out. You got to bust out of religion. And you could be in the very same place. It's not about leaving a building, but it's busting out of the mindset and say, hey, you know, meet with your pastor and say, listen, I want to be fruitful. I don't want to live one more day in my life without being a disciple of Jesus Christ. I want to be a godly man in my marriage. I want to be a godly father. I want to be a godly woman. I want to live biblically like God's called us to be. And I want to go out into the harvest field, and I'm going to come here to be encouraged. But this is not going to be my everything. This is going to be part of my filling station so I can go out and I could literally light myself and a spiritual fire to be able to win people with the light of my life to God. I mean, it can be done. And if you're finding out where you're at, it's not working, then find somebody who is. Listen, time is limited. Your life is passing by. Your chance to be fruitful is limited. And it's your choice. One man can make a difference. When you think about Charles Seymour, one man cried out to God, the Azusa Street Revival. Amy Semple McPherson, one woman. Catherine Kuhlman, one woman. On and on. Reverend Billy Graham, one man. And think about it. You can do that too. And God is looking. God will step over a million people. A million people. I think John G. Lake said this, but I'm not sure. He'll step over a million people to find somebody and walk with somebody who believes him. He's looking for somebody. Maybe that's you. If that's you, maybe BFN use for you. Maybe you need to be trained up. Maybe you get connected. Maybe God's called you to a city to go in and, like Paul, into Ephesus and say, you know, I'm going to bring in, you can't relate to what is because if you relate to what is, it's insane. You're going to go there and do the same thing they're doing. Listen, if you're doing the same thing they're doing, one of you is irrelevant. And what we're doing is not working.
Right.
It's not working. And if it's working, then we wouldn't be losing at the state of losing our nation at this moment. God would be being removed from all courtrooms and the money and the schools. And this stuff about you can't even put a scripture on a piece of paper when your football team goes through, that's horrific.
Right. Wow.
But it got that way because we made something up. And the thing that we made up, we're lifting it above God. Even at the consequence of the church itself. Jesus Christ is the hope of the world. The church is not the hope of the world. We are dependent on the hope of the world, which is Jesus Christ.
You've just been listening to the highlights from the Daily VFN Radio program. Don't forget to share them with your friends. Find more and listen to the Daily VFN Radio program in its entirety.